Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to the Cookbook Circle podcast. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Victoria.
We're two friends with a shared love of food, cooking, and all things cookbooks.
We are now in the third season of this podcast. Ooh. And this one is all about, well, not really anything in particular. We are themeless. So you can expect deep dives on certain dishes, reviews of cookbooks, of course, but there'll be new cookbooks, old cookbooks, all sorts of cookbooks. And of course, we'll be asking you, our lovely listeners, for some input on episodes that we're going to do.
It's going to be so fun. And if you love what we do, we're also on Patreon. This means if you'd like to support us, your subscription will help to cover the podcast's costs, from the books themselves to the ingredients for what we cook. And in return, you'll get some fun stuff like bonus minisodes. To find out more, visit our website, thecookbookcircle.com, or you can find the link in our show notes. Thanks, friends. Now, let's get to the fun part. Hello, Victoria.
Oh, hi, Hannah.
How are you doing?
I am good. How are you?
Good. You didn't talk about the weather.
I didn't, but I thought I was going to let you say how you are and then say that we've had a week of summer.
It's been so nice.
Here in England. It's been too hot for me, but I'm glad you found it nice.
Too hot to handle?
It's been too... Oh, do you remember that? Is that still on?
Yeah. My sister watches it.
I'm too old for that stuff now. I can't get behind it. I'm like, oh, put some clothes on. I'm not. But I'm just jealous that I'm not young and sexy like, you know, those,
mate,
you know, very beautiful people.
Anyway, I don't know about that.
But yes, it's been very, very hot and way too humid.
Yes. And I feel like next summer we need to do an episode on what to cook when your kitchen is too hot. Because yes, that is my life. Like, it just, there's no way of keeping it cool at all.
No.
Or, you know what I was thinking, actually? If I ever get to do a cookbook, or if we ever get to do a cookbook, I purely want, and maybe this exists, is like entertaining cookbook, like cooking for others, but what you can like completely pre-prepare so that you...
Yeah.
You can like sit with them and have a nice chat.
Put that on the list. Maybe let's edit this out, that bit out, so no one takes that from you. That idea from
you. I mean, at the rate I'm going in my list of things to do in life, I don't think it's at risk of happening anytime soon. But the irony of so I had friends around yesterday and cooked some of the stuff from this book, so we'll get back to that. But I was only pre-preparing everything on Saturday night so that I didn't have to like sweat in the kitchen on Sunday, and was all about like wanting to spend time with them and sit in the garden. And then my feral little dog was so naughty and like broke into the garden next door. So we spent the first like 45 minutes of this lovely like lunch outside trying to get this dog back. And then my friend's husband had to like hack in and rescue him because he got caught in some thorns. And then he did it again at the end of dinner. So the irony of the one time I've been most prepared for like a lunch in my life. And then you get distracted by a furry little feral creature.
At least you
creature.
Are prepared.
Yeah, that's true. It would be worse if I wasn't. Like, and then, yeah.
And then everyone's like, you're trying to rescue the dog and then also everyone's starving. Yeah. And you've got to do, you know, got to wait 2 hours for lunch.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway.
What have you been reading about?
Well.
Apart from how to train your dog.
Oh my God. Clearly not reading enough of that. No, he needs a lot of training. This newsletter, which I think we've talked about before in our favourite newsletters, it's called Stained Page News, and it's all about cookbooks.
Yes.
And actually,
she's brilliant.
She's great. This email was from the start of August, so it's a little bit behind. But the subject line is, why do so many cookbooks have similar recipe lists? And it was guest written by someone called Laura Sherb. And it was just really interesting because she was basically saying that, like, she's noticed in so many books that there's, like, just really similar dishes. So she has unnamed book one, spaghetti with clams, skirt steak with potatoes and charred broccolini. And then unnamed book two was linguine with clams, skirt steak with chimichurri and blistered broccolini. Ugh. And unnamed book three is linguine with shellfish or clams, skirt steak with chilies, and you guessed it, more broccolini. And it's just, she just like started to notice this everywhere. And she said the food is always like kind of European influenced, but Americanized food. And it's just basically just quite boring was what she was saying. Yeah. And like it's just the same kind of classic dishes that are getting tweaked again and again and again instead of exploring something new. But basically the point of what she was saying was that we should be kind of looking to more niche bushes.
That's what dog was doing.
I was looking in some niche bushes yesterday. And the scratches on my legs will support that story. Oh. Niche books from people like Priya Krishna and Eric Kim. And it's like all kind of, you know, cultural heritages that haven't really been explored very much in cookbooks. And that we as kind of cookbook buyers should be buying these kind of books and supporting them because they're completely fresh and new and they're doing something different. I just thought it was a really interesting piece.
Yeah, you sent it to me and it is fascinating. Like I'd not really thought about it like that before or thought about it at all.
Yeah.
But it's so true. And I'm sure that it boils down to marketing and, you know, who gets the budgets. And we know that all of that is entirely skewed towards, you know, the, like, you know, thin white women and, you know, shouty white chefs,
yeah,
men chefs. But that shouldn't be the case.
Yeah, it's just
because there's so much to be gained from learning about different things.
Yeah, and she's right. It is boring. Like I do. So many of them are quite like big names as well. But when you think about them, they're just quite general. There isn't really a niche.
Yeah.
Again, niche bush. And yeah,
maybe that could be your vegetarian cookbook name.
I mean, it does sound a bit on the
or
verge.
Your porn.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think niche bush is how I'm gonna.
Maybe it's our band name of the week.
Yeah, it might be.
An early contender.
Anyway,
niche just, bush and the broccolini.
Niche bush and the blistered broccolini. I just thought it was a really great point. And I wondered if, you know, how many of the books that we've reviewed, if you just looked at the kind of menu or the recipe list, there would be similarities, I think, especially in the kind of zeitgeisty kind of 20, you know, cool women in their 20s and 30s, I think there can be a lot of similarities.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah.
And I think when we first looked at this, right, my response was, what I'd really like is more kind of, although I'm going to say this, but what I also don't expect is for people to, you know, explain their culture and cultural foods to me. But I do like, and I would like more cookbooks that are like Korean food 101 or, you know, but aren't like basic and like that get into the history and understanding and of the food, but don't, but just almost explain it from the bottom up.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like with Korean food or with Japanese food, like what are the building blocks of, the various dishes that come. The same with, like, I don't know, like Mexican food, I'm sure is the same. Yeah. Like, I'm sure there's a few different, like chilies and obviously like corn flours and things like that. And that you need to like know and understand about to then like build an understanding of Mexican food. And like, I'd like to read more of those books.
Yeah. The problem is that the people that know the most about it don't have the profile to like, you know, sell loads of cookbooks, right? So it's like, it is cyclical. That's why she's saying like, it's important that we do buy those books, because otherwise the kind of generalist ones just keep succeeding and like, you know, kind of powering through like more and more blah cookbooks with not much to say.
Yeah, exactly. I have Eric Kim's Korean American book and it's great.
Is it?
It's really good. Yeah. He writes for the New York Times. And he's the one that came up with that gochujang cookies recipe that went kind of viral at Christmas. Yes. And he's great. He's really interesting. He's great to follow on social media as well. Like, talks a lot of about food and about Korean food, and he's great. And I think we are going to continue this conversation, aren't we? Possibly over on our Patreon minisodes about our favorite niche cookbooks, or just niche cookbooks that we have.
Yes, I think that's a great shout. And I don't know. Oh, I've got my Irish one. I can talk about that. My friend Laura, our friend Laura, got me the. Yeah, I think it's just called the Irish Cookbook or something. And it's by that Michelin star chef, JP McMahon. And it's all about like loads of interesting like niche ingredients and stuff. So yeah, that would be a really good one. Join us on Patreon, where we will be reactivating our lives after summer.
We'll be pouring water on our niche bushes and coming back to life.
Flowering. We'll stop. I'm sorry. Anyway.
But
niche buts.
Niche bushes are not the only thing we're talking about today. Also, this is our first post-summer episode, which means that we are back on our normal schedule of every 2 weeks posting.
Schedule.
Hopefully.
Schedule.
Schedule.
We'll be scheduling.
Schedule.
Yes, back to every 2 weeks. We've got to hold ourselves to account on that one. I've forgotten how to podcast. I've just completely forgotten everything. But it's exciting. And speaking of exciting.
Also, over on our Patreon, we will, if you want, we will do a whole episode in our Valley Girl accent.
Nobody wants that.
Nobody.
Nope.
So, today. What are we talking about? Today on the Cookbook Circle, we are talking about a lovely book. Spoiler alert, I think it's lovely. It's Table for Two by Bree Graham.
Ah, Bree.
Bree. What great name, Bree, by the way.
Does it not ever make you think of that bit in 10 Things I Hate About You before they like crash that house, Bogey Lowenstein's house, to have the house party, and he's like having his mates around and they're having a really lame gathering, and then someone knocks at the door and he goes, "That'll be Nigel with the brie," and he goes and opens the door and then all these like frat boys and like keg like guzzling teens like break their way into the house and they have like a massive party. Just me? Okay.
Does the brie ever arrive?
I don't think Nigel
ever shows
up. I feel
like I haven't seen 10 Things I hate about you. I've seen it. Okay. I just haven't seen it
enough
as many times as seemingly you have.
Well, get on board, baby.
Okay.
Yeah, Bree's a great name. Sorry. And this is
10 Things I Hate About You is Taming of the Shrew, right?
Yes.
That's okay, fine. That's what it's based
an
on.
An excellent film.
I'm not that's not just a comment on. Anyway.
Moving on.
Anyway.
What
Bring Warm Comes Back
cover for this book.
Excuse me?
I said, what a beaut cover.
A beaut. I thought you said, what a beaut, the cover. And I was like, oh, we're going into Canadian.
There is a nationality we haven't abused. No. I joke. Ever? No, no.
Let's get to it. It isn't it? It's like a... Also, it's a beautiful colour, like, book.
Yes.
Like a beigey...
Yeah.
...colour.
And then,
yeah, it's like a sketch of a... table for two. I like the fish
recipes for the one front. You love
it. Looks so happy.
Yeah, I mean, it's
even
dead.
Though it's dead and cooked
and covered in lemons.
I mean, that's how I'd like. Oh, and then on the back it's the empty table.
Yes,
I hadn't even noticed that. Oh, Brie,
you're a babe. You're a big old babe.
You are a babe. So it is a collection of recipes, this book.
Yeah, famously.
going. We'll see you next week.
Going where no cookbook has gone before.
Shall I tell you a little bit about Bree Grimm?
Yes, please.
So she is a very international writer,
yes.
But she was born in Sydney in Australia,
mm-hmm.
but grew up in Singapore.
Wow.
And then came to England, to London.
Yep.
For university, and has been here ever since.
Ah.
I don't know why you would come, but you know, she loves it.
I mean,
so
that's what
know,
I do.
Yeah. I mean,
big old smelly old London, too, isn't but... it? It just captures
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's true. That's it. You just can't leave.
No. I mean, you did.
So she has a. I did, and but I, you know, kind of regret it every day.
I shouldn't laugh. I regret it too.
Come no. she spent her childhood in Singapore, but she would come back to Sydney for summer. So if she has like a very, you know, she I think she would. Class herself as Australian from what I've read, but yeah, incredibly well traveled. But I think that is the basis, well, for a lot of the stuff in this book in terms of her writing and her explanations for why she's written the book, mm-hmm. and why she's written it, you know, it's a collection of recipes for two people,
yeah,
like not necessarily your romantic partner, but it can be for two just people that you love, another person that you love, which is really lovely. I also read in a interview with her that her dad is Northern Irish from Belfast.
Oh.
Yeah, I saw her saying that her most proud career moment was signing books in a bookshop in Belfast with her dad.
Oh, that's so lovely.
And that's where, yeah, isn't it, where he grew up.
She has a box tea recipe in here, actually, doesn't she? And she talks about like a cafe run by Irish people that she used to go to in London, but it shut down in 2020. I thought that was nice.
Yeah, there's a lot of lovely stories in this book, I think, about her. She lived in Clerkenwell and, you know, all the little restaurants and stuff she would go to.
Yeah, like historically, I always think you're way better than me at like just reading the foreword and like reading the description of the recipes and stuff. But this, I really just enjoyed just like I just lay on my bed and just like leafed through it and read all the like little stories.
Aww.
I really, really like the way she writes. It's really beautiful.
She's a beautiful writer. Yeah. Like I also felt very like moved by her writing and her stories.
Yeah, I love it.
But I think it seems as though, well, again, I can't back this up for anything from her, but I think that maybe she's a writer first and a kind of recipe developer or writer second, because she's also she's an editor, the lifestyle editor for Courier magazine.
Right, yeah.
She's done travel writing. She's edited for other magazines. She's written lots of stuff online and generally is just an all-round
talented
babe.
Gal.
Literary babe. Yeah, she is.
I feel like she
does supper clubs.
Oh, I want to go to one. She, for me, the way she writes is almost a bit like Nigella-like in some ways, the way mm-hmm. it kind of is very atmospheric and yeah, yes. evocative, but without the kind of ridiculous thesaurus.com kind of like synonym, you know, the yes, words where
sensual,
you're like chill out, yeah. Nigella, something can also just be nice. But, you know, I think it's just, yeah. It's a beautiful writing style. I think it's a real joy to read.
Yeah, she's amazing. And also just to note, so it is September mm-hmm. and if you should go and follow Bree Graham on Instagram, everyone, because her feed is absolutely beautiful and she just posts absolutely gorgeous photos of her like food and just like she talks a little bit about this in the preamble to this book about how she like you should romanticize your life and you should just be, you know, grateful for the little moments. I feel like her Instagram like perfectly captures that, yeah. like just pictures of her breakfast with perfect sunlight. But all this to say, she went on holiday on Friday this past week to Marrakesh, which is in Morocco.
Yeah.
And then hours after she got there, this absolutely horrendous earthquake, which has killed thousands of people, hit. And she is still out there as we're recording and she's stayed. She can't get home until next week. She was staying on Instagram. And so she's staying to like help
wow.
and do whatever she can to like help out. And yeah, I just think
that's amazing.
She's just amazing. Like I saw her story when she arrived in Marrakesh, like, oh, I'm in heaven. This is the greatest thing ever. And then literally 2 hours later, she was just like letting people know that she was okay. Ooh. It was like a almost 7 degree?
Scale?
What do you call it?
Don't know.
Scale.
No, I don't know.
Anyway, it was a big old earthquake.
You so, you know, that's another chat. Oh, wait. You do. Sorry, we're not.
Don't.
No.
Yeah, so basically she's just amazing. And she talks a lot in the book, but also in a lot of the like interviews I read with her. I didn't read them with her, but the interviews were with her and I read them whilst I was on my own. saying that she, because she moved around so much.
Spend your time with her. Hey, want to cuddle up and read your interview?
I think there's a lot of chefs that would like to sit and read interviews with them together. Anyway, but I don't think she's one of them. Yeah, she talks about feeling homesick all the time, like for somewhere else all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Because if she was in Singapore, she'd miss Sydney. And she talks about going back to Sydney in the summer and eating things that she couldn't get in Singapore, like sausage rolls and salt and vinegar crisps
yeah.
and things like that. And then I guess the same the other way around. And now she's in London, I guess, and there's lots of things that you can't get.
Mm.
And so she just talks about like that constant kind of movement, which I feel like when I was reading, I was like, I actually thought about you because you've moved around a lot, mm-hmm. right? Like to different places and that whole, and obviously you're living in an entirely different country right now.
Yeah.
To where you're from.
But that's everyone, right? That's ever moved from anywhere is you have food associations with different places. Mm. Like when I go see my sister in Seville and I really want like the tomato on toast for breakfast with like the really good olive oil. And yeah, you go home and you want like proper potato crisps and not yeah. those imposter ones that you can buy in the supermarket here.
I have those in my cupboard right now.
Yeah, they're
I love
good,
them.
They're good.
At least you might be obsessed with them. Like, they are really good, aren't
yeah,
they? The cheese and onion ones. Are they all cheese and onion?
You can get salt and vinegar too, and sometimes you can get smoky bacon. I think they used to do prawn cocktail, but I never see them anymore. Irish listeners, let us know. I've been gone too long.
Tato PR, send us some packages.
Oh,
yeah. So I think, and then so yeah, in the preamble to this book, Table for Two, she talks about how she. It's really like it's beautiful, but it's also kind of sad how like because of this homesick feeling, she was like constantly like craving and looking for love, not necessarily romantic love, but also like friendships
yeah.
and, you know, a place to belong, I guess, which is aww. A lot of, I think, of people feel that way if they've moved around a lot, I think, and they're just looking for community. And then she found it, I guess, eventually, you know, in food and in cooking for people. And she lives with her boyfriend now, and her, she has a cat, which we love. And yeah, I think she just talks about, yeah, like I said, romanticizing your life. And I really like this sentence. I'm going to say it because, like I said, it's really lovely writing. At the end of the, like, you know, prologue to this book, she says, fight for delight in all you eat and with everyone you love.
Aww.
It's like, that's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, she's great. Yeah, she gives me warm, fuzzy feelings. She says,
I'd like her to write me like a letter or something.
I mean, we can ask her to. She might not comply, but we could give it a go.
Like a pen pal.
And then you can sit there and read it together when you meet.
Maybe she'll sign a picture of herself for me. And, you know, like you used to send off for, yeah, like Boyzone or something. I didn't do that, obviously.
No, but me neither. Definitely not with five. She says in the back that she...
I feel like we need a five alarm.
Hey!
We talk about five quite a lot.
Because they're my favourite boy bands growing up. They're very talented. Like... Underrated, almost. Almost. She says in the back that... the book is a love letter to the four people she loves to cook for the most. And she says her best friend, her boyfriend, and her mum and dad, which I thought was cute because she, yeah, like you said, it's not always romantic love that she's talking about. She talks about, like, you know, cooking breakfast for your mate who's just gone through a breakup or something. And yeah, I just think that's really nice. Oh, I like it.
There's a whole breakfast section, right? And I love that as well.
Yes,
you know,
more breakfast sections in books. Please. I never actually make them for breakfast, but I, as we know, I like breakfast for dinner. The brown butter and the sage scrambled eggs spoke to me.
Yes.
Whipped ricotta toast, Bertram Usley.
That's great.
Oh, also she had like a transform your table section, which I thought was cute.
Yes.
And she had like the tablecloth, the flowers, the candle, the cutlery, the plate and the platters and the music, which, and then she writes a little bit about each, which I thought was really, really nice and inspired me to run out and get a little paper tablecloth from my garden table yesterday.
I love that.
Yeah.
She also has a like a store-bought is fine section.
Love that.
And where she talks about puff pastry and frozen croissants if you just...
Yeah,
you know, you can't, if you're hungover as fuck and you just want to, you know, do the bare minimum. I'm like, I love that. Like, more of that as well.
Yeah,
in books,
it was inspired by Ina Garten, wasn't it? That section. Where, yeah, I thought that was great. And she tells you how to, like, that roasting a chicken is a lovely thing to do, but a supermarket roast chicken is like the best thing ever as well. Just
yes,
it's great. And yeah, the genius, I thought that was a really smart tip. She says to buy a ready-made lemon tart to top it with fresh raspberries. If you're feeling fancy, to pipe some raspberry jam into each of the raspberries, or like use it to spell something out for someone's birthday. I thought that was a great tip.
Yeah, she, that's great. Also, I like, what I like about this book is the menus. So yes, it's in two sections, right? Yeah. So there's like easy to impress, which is the first section.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of easier stuff, quicker stuff, like, but still really lovely.
Yes.
Like looks and you know, definitely tastes amazing. But it's like easy and quick. Whereas the second section is called Just to Delight, which is the more kind of involved, impressive, like, you know, you're trying to impress someone.
Yeah.
Things. But within each of those sections, there's when the pages go like a pinky orange color, that means that it's like her menu. So she set it up for certain situations and she just like cooked these things together. And I like that because it tells you what to do and it like, it puts things together, yes, for you. And it just makes it easier,
yeah,
to think if you're already cooking for someone or doing a party or whatever, like, okay, I can do all these together. They'll all fit together. The taste will be nice,
yeah,
and it'll be enough food and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's so true. Because, yeah, like I said, when I was going to cook this weekend, I was like, oh, God, I just can't. I didn't have the imagination to put things together again that I wanted to like pre-make. And it was just, but one of the sections was like very inspiring on that front. So yeah, I really like that touch too.
Yeah. Which we always say this about menus, right? We love it.
Yeah.
We love them when they're together. But in this book, particularly, and what is a little bit different is that they're written together.
Yes.
So she'll introduce the menu, say when it's good for, how long it might take, all that kind of stuff. And then the three or four recipes will all be, you know, together. So you've only got to, you know, turn the page once.
Yeah.
Not like in some books where they put it at the back and it's an afterthought.
Yeah.
So you have to keep flicking through it. So it was just a nice idea.
Reminds me of Diana Henry, How to Eat a Peach. She does that.
Yes.
She?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What babe?
Yeah.
Babes all round.
Loads of babes.
Love them. So it came out this year, so 2023, earlier this year, I think. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, it's been a great success. Like I've seen it everywhere. And she's done a lot of press around it and is great. And it's had a lot of good reviews and it's going to get reviewed by us, which is obviously the most important review to have.
Always.
And yeah, I think, like I said, I think you should all go follow her on Instagram because she's great. And like puts these, like this last week she was talking about, because there's a drinks page in here, isn't there?
That.
Yeah. And on her Instagram, she was saying she had all this like stone fruit and she has a Bellini recipe in there. And she was saying she cuts it all up when she has it left at the end of the summer, ready to freeze to use for like putting in Bellinis, you know, during the winter, or putting it on top of some kind of cake or something, like just using. And I was like, you're smart. You're a smart cookie.
Yes. Yeah, she is.
Because who doesn't want summer peaches in December for their Bellinis?
No, not me. Or me? I don't know.
Me? Yeah.
Me?
Not many double negatives. Anyway, I'm talking too much and I'd like to know what you made.
Never talking too much. I feel like this is a book you could talk about for a while.
Yes.
What did I make?
And it's a book that I feel like both of us are going to be like, I was going to cook this, I was going to cook this, I was going to cook this. But yeah, go on. What did you make?
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to come back to this one. So I made three things for yesterday. So it was actually four people present. So I doubled everything.
Cheater.
I know.
Cheater.
It was a table for...
Oh, Hannah has more than one person she loves.
It was three people I love. Well, one of them I haven't told them not to yet. But anyway.
Soft launch then.
No. Stuffed fried olives, Victoria. That's the first thing that I made.
Did you?
Yes. This particular little menu, it was a summer sunset dinner. I only made the olives from it, but I loved the idea of the whole menu. It was stuffed fried olives, courgette and lemon risotto, peach pistachio and mozzarella salad. You blitz up pistachios to this dressing. Oh, genius. And then this intensely apricot and amaretti ice cream. And I was like, oh, this is so great. I would make all of that. But I kind of... you needed courgette flowers for the risotto. And like I said, I didn't want to be standing at the hob, so I didn't make it. But I just thought that was such a perfect little entertaining menu. So the stuffed fried olives, I pre-made these the night before. I've always wanted to try fried olives and I don't think I have ever tasted them before. And these are stuffed with a gorgonzola and chopped parsley. Did you make these? Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I can tell. I was like, why is she looking at me like that?
I was like, what am I going to say? But yeah, I also made
these. My God, I can tell by your face. Oh, this is exciting.
Because I can't wait to hear what you thought of them because, yeah.
Okay, so for the listeners, these are green olives, large green olives pitted, stuffed with a gorgonzola, chopped parsley, even though it says rosemary in the body of the text and I got really confused. And then you coat them in flour, egg, panko breadcrumbs, and then you fry them in a flavorless oil. So I did that the night before. I prepped them all the night before, stuffed them with the cheese and the herby cheese and like coated them in the breadcrumbs. And then I just put them in the fridge and then I just fried them off when people got here. Oh. I know. I'm just that kind of host, you know. And I couldn't, my Sainsbury's is so shit sometimes. I couldn't get panko breadcrumbs, but I got these like chili breadcrumbs, smoked chili breadcrumbs that are quite like chunky. Did you get them too?
Oh my God. So I have those breadcrumbs and I thought I had panko breadcrumbs and I got my packet of panko down and there was none in there. Oh. But I have those exact breadcrumbs from Sainsbury's from something else I cooked. So I just used those as well, those exact ones, that's those smoky mental. Chili ones. That is so funny.
I really like these. I thought they were delicious.
I loved them. Like I ate them all myself. Like the recipe makes 12.
Yeah.
And I was home alone last week, well, with Marcus, but he was sleeping. And I'm not sure that he was
a big olive fan. Is he?
He does love olives, does actually. He really likes
that's
them.
Impressive.
Yeah, he's got a very sophisticated palate. But anyway, my husband doesn't like olives, but that's, you know, he wasn't here, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But I scoffed them. So there, you fry them. And then you serve them with a bit of lemon and, you know, sprinkle them with salt, yes. Right?
Yeah, I thought they were such a great snack with drinks, right? Like a beer snack or yeah. Whatever.
Yeah.
Again.
The perfect, like, salty, creamy,
yeah.
Herby, crispy. Like, it's everything you want.
Delicious. I thought the Gorgonzola would be more overpowering because one of the people didn't love blue cheese, but actually it kind of depended on which one of the olives you got, and I yes. guess it depends on what your olives are like, right, and how much like real estate there is there in the middle to
kind
of put the Gorgonzola in. But I thought they were so delicious, and like they worked really well to pre-make like that and just fry them off,
probably better, right, because yeah. your cheese has gone hard and in the middle,
yeah. They're delicious.
Love them. Would absolutely make them again. And I don't love blue cheese, right?
Yeah.
Cheese generally. But I was like, these just look too good.
Oh.
And spoiler alert, I did make the courgette and lemon risotto. So I did half of this. I did half of the recipe.
Oh, but I'm
half
pleased.
Of this menu.
Oh, that's good though.
I couldn't find courgette flowers though, but we'll talk about that later. But I was so, like you, like enamored with this like menu.
Yes.
For like summer sunset dinner.
Yeah.
That I couldn't not make them. So I was like, fuck it, I'll get the Gorgonzola. And I loved it.
Yeah. I actually thought it was kind of enhanced by the smoked chili and the breadcrumb because it was like, yeah, it was like crunchy, spicy, creamy. Oh
yeah.
My God. And you could play around with that loads, right? Like you could try a different cheese or...
You totally could, yeah.
Put like maybe anchovy a little bit in the middle or something if you wanted.
Different herbs.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I thought you could even put like a... I know you don't like it, but like a dill would like be a good little punchy...
Yeah.
Something.
Little addition, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're great. Love them very much.
Yay! I love them so much. But you know what? We don't talk about what we make before the pod,
mm-mm.
but I texted Hannah whilst I was eating those, being like, oh my God, this brie gram stuff is so good.
Is that what you were eating?
That was what I was like crunching down on while I was finishing the risotto. Anyway.
Yeah, I think it's a good sign though, like, because we don't tell each other what we make, but I think we can always tell when the other one is like really excited about a book because we just can't help but like, because we talk about food all the time and then we were like, oh my God, this book. So then the second thing I made was the tomato salad with garlic and almond dressing.
Ooh.
I made like a tart.
I saw that.
So like a classic, like Hannah's entertaining, I always make like a tart. So I was just like, but it's just such an easy thing to prep. So that was like my main bit. I did the olives to start. Then I did like this tart and some like potato salad. And then this tomato salad with garlic and almond dressing. So it's... The dressing is inspired by the cold Spanish soup that's called ajo blanco, which is like garlic and almond and bread and stuff. So you make that dressing first and you get a slice of white bread and you take off the crust and you soak it in milk. And then you blitz that up with blanched almonds that you've toasted a little bit in the pan, garlic, plenty of olive oil, sea salt and some white wine vinegar. And it was quite liquid. It was quite like, I would say, yeah, somewhere between, she says it's between a dressing and a dip, which I think is right. I actually thought it was like a little bit too runny, and I thought maybe because I'd doubled the recipe, like something hadn't quite worked out. So I just soaked, and when it was all blitzed up, I soaked another slice of bread in the dressing and then re-blitzed it all again. And I felt like the texture was a bit better. And then you just, you kind of smear that on a plate, and then you arrange ripe tomatoes. Our favorite thing,
Of course,
over the dressing, and you sprinkle over some tarragon, mint, and half a red onion, and loads of black pepper, and you serve it up.
Oh, that sounds so good!
It was delicious. It was really interesting. It's quite like it's vinegary, it's garlicky, it's got the almondy kind of flavor. It's creamy. It's like it's not. It's not like many things I've tasted before.
Yeah, I was going to say almonds and tomatoes aren't something that I would put together.
Yeah.
Generally.
It was really nice, especially on like a really hot day like that, right? It was just really refreshing. And then the red onion kind of lifts it all. So I really, really like that too. That was delicious. And olive oily. Yeah, it was just yum. And I like anything like that where you kind of have the dress, you know, it's like vegetables over like a sauce on the base. I think that's just always so impressive. And when you're like spooning it out into your plate, you're like, oh, what's this underneath here? Hello.
Yes.
So that was great. And then the third thing I made was the apple pie a la mode.
Ooh.
Now, a la mode means that you like scoop vanilla ice cream like on top of the pie when you serve it, which I didn't do because it was bloody hot. So I just like sliced it up for everyone and gave them a scoop of ice cream. And I did salted caramel ice cream, which was really nice of it. But this is great. And again, I pre-made the pastry the night before and the apples the night before. And then really early before it got hot, I brought it all together, put it in the fridge, like ready to be put in the oven. And then just like after we'd had like our main course, like popped it in the oven so that it was like freshly baked for dessert, which was really nice. So you make like a pastry with plain flour, icing sugar, cold butter, sour cream and egg. And that comes together really nicely. You do the dry first, then you add in the butter and then the sour cream at the end, and you kind of bring it all together and then just chill it for a while. But it was a nice like sturdy pastry. And then you make these caramel apples. So you make a caramel with sugar, water in a pan. And then when it gets a nice like deep brown, you pour in some cream, turn the heat down. You add in salt, nutmeg, cinnamon, corn flour, lemon zest. So it's this delicious aromatic caramel. Yeah. And then you put your apples in and you coat the apples in this caramel. It just looks so nice and it smells delicious. And you just simmer them for like 10 minutes until they're a bit cooked on the outside, but they're still holding their shape. And then you chill those in the fridge as well. And then you roll out your pastry and you put your apples on top, excuse me. And then you just kind of fold up the sides to make like a galette kind of thing.
Yes.
So it's really rustic.
Yeah, the picture, it looks like a galette, right? Like more so than a proper pie, like you would imagine an apple pie to look like.
Yeah, exactly. And then, when you're ready to bake it, you like just brush it with egg, the kind of pastry that you can see, and sprinkle some sugar over, and you bake it for like 45 minutes until it's all golden and delicious. And it was really nice and it really held its shape very well. It had like such a depth of flavor from that caramel and like pre-cooking the apples a bit, because sometimes I don't love when like an apple tart is just like just apples and like a bit of sugar. There was more going on. And it was really nice with the ice cream, just delicious, like freshly baked. And I doubled this recipe as well to make like a bigger galette. And it was just so easy to do that because it's free form. You don't have to worry about like what tin you're using or anything. But I imagine that the quantities that she has here make like such a cute little galette, like for two people. Like, I think that would just be great. But it was
the sweet. Lovely. It like looks great, like some of the other sweet stuff.
Delicious.
Like the mango cloud cake. Did you see that?
That was my
looked so good.
I was gonna make that was my other contender for dessert. And there's like a banana split that she does in here that looks great.
Yeah.
I really like this book.
We love you, Brie. Yeah, I really like this book. And that, also that apple cake pie, I think, yes. I believe it's called. it's just versatile, right? Yeah. You make it from now until Christmas as a lovely, like, warming autumnal dessert, or, like, you know, because apples are always around.
Yes,
it's not
exactly.
Like peaches or mangoes. Like, you can get them. I'm obviously you can get mangoes all year round, but they're not very nice. She's great.
She is great.
So the apple pie was from the Just to Delight section, so the more complicated section.
Yes.
The olives are from the less complicated section, and the salad is from
the less complicated section, I think. I didn't notice the colour changes because I'm less observant than you.
No, the colour changes is just for the menus.
The division. I think.
The division.
Oh, God. Who knows?
Is it? I feel like it's not. I feel like it's in the... Anyway, it doesn't matter. I'm just, you know, just letting the people know.
Letting the listeners know. It's...
Letting the listeners know.
Yeah, no, it's in the Just to Delight section. Sorry, part two. Yeah. So, yeah.
Great. And how was it received by your guests? Your lovely, loved guests?
Very well. Very well. They liked everything, I think. Nice. So, yeah. It was...
Even with the distraction of dog running around.
Thankfully, we'd caught him by that point, and he was just howling down at us from the window where he could see us eating in the garden. Honestly, a joy of a dog.
He's been grounded.
Oh, my God. Look at him. He's lying here on my bed like butter wouldn't melt, having a great old time. Nightmare. Being a dog mum. It's no joke. What did you it cook, isn't. My friend?
So I also made three things, whoop, whoop, because this is a book that demands it, frankly.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make four. I had the stuff for a fourth, but I just haven't had the time to do it. So I made the fried stuffed olives. We talked about that.
Yeah.
They were great. Would make them again. I just couldn't resist them when I saw the little picture and recipe. And so then I made the courgette and lemon risotto, which, like Hannah said, is a part of this.
Yes, menu.
Summer menu. So I just made the first two things. And it's lovely, lovely little risotto.
Really?
So it's very, like I said, yeah, like you said, you need courgette flowers. I couldn't get them, but I was committed to it. And I was like, it'll be fine without them. Like, they're lovely. And I'm sure if I really looked, I could find some, but I'm sure it'd be fine without them. They'd, you know, anyway. So you chop an onion, cook that down in some olive oil until it's kind of, you know, transparent, you know, as you do with onions. And then you add like sliced courgette. So she says one. I use like one and a half because I wasn't doing the flowers, and also they're a little bit small. You then cook that down for a bit till it's kind of soft. You add some garlic. I think it's quite a lot of garlic. Oh, no, two garlic cloves until... Oh, you add the garlic. And then you add the rice.
Oh,
your,
yes.
Risotto rice. It's about 250 grams until it's all kind of... Everything's like coated.
Yeah.
As you do. And then you add 120 mils of wine, white wine, dry white wine to it all.
Yes.
And you mix that until it's combined. And then, I should have said, but before, she gets you to like heat up 700 mils of veggie or chicken stock.
Nice. Yeah.
You choose. I did veggie. And so that's like hot for when you need it. Hot for when you need it.
Hot stock.
So then you just, it's like classic risotto. You add your stock in, ladle at a time until it's completely absorbed, like each ladle is absorbed, so you're stirring. That she says that should take about 20 minutes until the rice is cooked, but with a bit of a bite. And then you take it off the heat,
right?
You add lemon zest, whole lemon, lemon zest, mint.
Nice.
So like a tablespoon of chopped mint, 25 grams of parmesan on your courgette flowers.
Lovely.
Which I didn't have, but I did add some like spring onions at this for just a little bit of like texture.
Nice.
Not quite the same, but I just thought, you know, we've got the lemon, bit of a zing,
yeah,
bit of a crunch. And then you add a bit of butter, she say, like a tablespoon of unsalted butter. You mix those in and then you put the lid on, you leave it for 5 minutes to like incorporate,
get to know each other
flavors. Yeah, mingle, I believe is the verb that she uses. But she does also say, leave it for 5 minutes. Meanwhile, make the peach and mozzarella salad.
Yes.
So that's like giving you time to like go away and do the pistachio mozzarella salad.
Genius.
It was lovely.
Yeah.
It's so summery, like, because the courgettes are good at the moment, obviously the lemon. And it's so delicate,
yeah,
after like those olives where you've got the really punchy flavors.
Yes.
Excuse me. Yeah, it was lovely, and I ate it for, like I said, I was home alone, so I ate it for lunch the next day, and it was as good, maybe even better. With, you know, a little bit of extra cheese in there, like even I put a little bit of it. No, it's not too much parmesan, because yeah, that can be a problem also for me, like too much parmesan, all you taste is parmesan.
Yes.
That's not my thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I loved it.
I bet it's not like authentic either to have heaps of parmesan in there, right? Like it's probably just meant to be like a flavor enhancer. If you're putting loads of parmesan in, it's probably because there's not much else going on. But I mean, don't get me wrong, I love parmesan, but that sounds great. And the mint is nice. Yeah. Courgette mint. Oh, and lemon. Delicious. Yeah. How could you go wrong?
Exactly. It's so nice. And I'm sure that the courgette flowers are lovely, but I don't know even if that's even just more about the color, like once you've served it, because it's quite like it's quite beigey dish, because obviously you've got courgettes, but it's only the skin of those that's green, and then it's just rice really and lemon.
Is there a picture of that
So on the front page of that menu,
she has everything 59, together.
She has everything, well, apart from the ice cream. So yeah, I think it just has that, those like orangey hues to it. So I did wonder whether you could put, go on.
I was just going to say, all her photography is just so beautiful as well, isn't it? She loves an overhead shot.
Yeah. She loves a flat lay. Like it's fair. Like everyone is that.
Yeah.
Like on a lovely, you know, tablecloth.
Yeah.
Crumbs on the side. But it works.
It does. There's the occasional Alice and Roman style red manicure, like dunking into something. But I like it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, and it all looks like eaten. Like it looks like lived in and eaten. And I like that for
real.
There's like these little bits of, you know, cartoons as well. But yeah, she absolutely loves a flat lay. And I can't.
No, we're not judging.
I can't be mad about it. Because it's all beautiful, and it made me want to
live her life.
Make it. Yes.
I want to live her life.
Be a friend.
Brie, yeah, our friend.
I didn't make the salad. Brie, our friend. Oh my God.
Brie, our guest. Brie, our guest. I can't remember the rest of the words to that song, but you get the idea.
Intensely apricot and amaretti ice cream does sound nice. That's like the dessert for this summer menu. But
yeah. And not too.
I'm not going to make
it. It doesn't require an ice cream maker, which I thought was great. I was quite tempted to make that actually. Yeah. Oh, delicious. And then what was your third thing?
So my third thing, I actually thought about making the box tea, but I wondered if you would make it. I don't know if you had any kind of feelings about box tea, but I thought that, do you? I've never eaten it, so I was like, I feel like I wouldn't know how to say, like, not how to say, but if I could say it. Saying that, what the third thing I made was latkes. The latkes with smoked salmon and dill.
Nice.
And I don't think I've ever eaten a latke from a, you know, authentic Jewish restaurant or like,
no,
you know,
me neither.
I don't really know what they're supposed to taste like, but these were great.
They kind of like,
I love that kind of
rosti vibes. Is that what they?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Like a kind of like a hash brown, like an American style hash brown.
Yes.
I found that hers are incredibly like crunchy.
Right.
And I like that. I like that. That crispiness.
Yeah.
But if you're not into that, maybe this, you just cook them for a bit less time. These were really, really easy, but they looked very impressive.
Nice.
So it's 500 grams of potatoes, she suggests Maris Piper. You peel and then coarsely grate them. And then you put in a tea tail. A tea tail. Stop telling tea tails.
I'm a tea tailor.
Tea tails behind the tea door. In a tea towel and squeeze the shit out of it, basically. Nice. Until they're
that was dry. Verbatim. Is that the quote?
Yeah. I think she does say to squeeze like mad. So, you know. Similar.
Nice, yeah.
You know, in a thesaurus, squeeze the shit out of it for as long as possible to get as much of the water out as possible. And then she says, like, when you think it's all out, leave them for a minute and squeeze it one last time. So I did that. And then whilst I was leaving it for a minute, you make, like, the stuff that's going in with the potato. So in a mixing bowl, you add an egg white, 2 teaspoons of corn flour and some black pepper.
Nice.
And then you mix it until foamy, which I liked. Oh, I liked that description of how to get it right. You do put some salt on the potato before you wring it out. And then you, once your potatoes are as dry as possible, you put your potatoes into the bowl and mix. She has to use 2 forks and like fluff them. So that they're as like covered as possible.
Yeah.
Fluff, 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 fluff. And then you, you know, just bringing you in the moment with me.
Yes. Your fluffy little moment.
So then you heat up your, you heat up your oil and butter she has together to fry them in.
Right.
And it's 1 tablespoon of salted butter and some 3 tablespoons of flavorless oil. I probably had a little bit more than that because I used the oil that I'd used for my olives.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's not
thrifty.
Waste oil. Yeah. And then just before you're about to fry, when your oil and butter is ready, you add 1 more teaspoon of corn flour to the top of the potatoes and fluff again with your forks.
I just, dear lovely listeners, I wish you could see the hand movements that Victoria is doing right now.
I'm fluffing. It's like I'm churning butter.
Yeah. But how often have you churned butter in your life? You've got
I have never, but I have seen people on TikTok doing it, so I feel like it's the same.
TikTok is like a world of education and misinformation.
Yes. Well, that was deep. Well done.
I can't be all laughed a minute, you know. I have to bring some seriousness to the situation.
So when you fluffed, you you put walnut size blobs of your potato mixture into the pan, and then you fry them on for 4 minutes either side.
Okay.
That's quite a long time for a walnut
shape
sized piece. And she says to only do 3 or 4 in the pan at a time because you don't want to overcrowd your pan. And then she does say at the beginning to heat the oven to like a low, like a 160 to, so you can put each batch in the oven to keep them warm.
Right.
I didn't do that because I was like, I'll just put them in the air fryer if I need to keep them warm.
Yeah.
But you put them on some kitchen towel, finish them off. This recipe gets about 12 and I got about that.
Right.
And then you top them with some sour cream and some smoked salmon, each one. Sour cream, and so they're nice little bites of deliciousness.
Nice.
And then dill and some lemon, and super crispy. Some of the ones I did in the beginning were probably done I got a bit nervous about them getting
too done,
overdone. So they were a bit lighter, and I guess it's just a personal preference thing.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe I'm absolutely, you know, hammering down on the lacquer army somewhere, because I don't know actually what they're supposed to be like. But
how deep is your lacquer? How deep, is your life?
I'd like a pound for every time we've sung that song on this podcast. How deep. And, you know, they just, they feel fancy, you know? We had them for lunch.
Nice, yeah.
I was less alone by this point. And
less alone. I mean, you were cooking.
Marcus joined in and had, like, just one on its own without the smoked salmon, and he liked it.
Oh, I mean, you are cooking for the one you love if it's just you on your own as well. You know, self-love is important.
Well,
yeah, in your niche bush.
So yeah, love them. Would make them again. On potatoes as well. She is like a twice baked potato recipe. Did you see that one with like mackerel?
Oh,
or something?
Yes.
I would make those as well. I had those booked, marked. And I would make those, but it was just too hot last week.
Yeah. Let's talk about what we wanted to make.
Yeah, let's just talk about all the things we wanted to make.
The nudie in toasted lemon thyme butter. I was so close to making those.
Me too!
Because it's such a fun method as well. You like submerge them in semolina and then put them in the fridge. I just thought that sounded really good. But again, heat put me off. Spinach cheese and herb pie. What were you going to say?
Yes, like a spanakopita.
Yes.
But simpler. Twice baked potatoes with mackerel, mustard and herbs. I am bookmarking that one for when it's a bit colder because that sounds lush.
Yeah. The bitter leaves with blood orange and crispy crumbs. I was close to making. I love a crispy crumb. The picky, which is the pasta with roasted tomatoes, olives and anchovies, sounded great.
And the artichoke and black pepper fettuccine. I was close to making that one, but I couldn't find artichokes.
Oh, this country and its ingredients, honestly.
It's jarred artichokes, though, because she says, and, you know, shout out to Brie for this, she says, like, it is a vegetable that requires a little patience and attention and dedication to prepare.
Did she listen
patience
to you?
Patience is not a virtue I possess. So she only she cooks them from a jar. So I was like, you're my girl.
Yeah. Crispy potatoes with oregano, olives and feta.
Yeah, that sounds delicious.
Box
the
tea.
We talked about the box tea. We talked about the mango cake, the cherry and apricot tart,
spiced rice pudding and gingery rhubarb. Yeah,
bless you, Doug.
Doug is sneezing in the background. I'm sorry. Oh, bless you. Oh my God, Doug, you're allergic to good manners.
After reading a lot of her interviews that I said I did, she talks about that roast chicken all the time, so she makes it every week, and then the soup that she makes.
Oh, the Sunday soup?
With the carcass of the chicken, so I feel like that's going to go on my list. I did think about it, but I was like, I've made so many roast chickens for the pod, I should branch out a little bit. And also, it was effing hot.
Yeah.
Oh, those Florence buns. Did you see those?
Yes, they look good.
They look so fun. Oh, it's just a great book. I would absolutely put it on your list if you like the good shit.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, aside from anything else, the portion control and like portion size is great because there's just minimal waste, minimal leftovers. I mean, sometimes you want leftovers, but everything is like a perfect size for two people. Mm. And I know that's the kind of whole premise of the book, but I don't think we've talked about that loads. It's just great.
Salted honey madeleines.
Yes, they sounded great.
They sounded great.
Yeah, you texted me being like, you're going to love this madeleine bit of the book.
Yeah, basically, we love it. And Chartbury, who we also love, and her flat lays.
Yeah, and if you can...
the little heart-shaped cake thing. The thousand-layer heart with rhubarb and cardamom and custard. Did you just say that?
No, I didn't say that. That was I was talking about the rhubarb rice pudding. She tells you to get, like, a mini cake tin at the start. She's like, they're just, like, great thing to have. And I agree. I've got a really cute little one from, like, Aldi or Lidl or something. And they're brilliant for those kind of, smaller portions. Shall we rate?
Let's rate her. Well, no, the book. I mean the book.
Yes. You definitely don't want
it's like a boat.
Breed. What? How is it like a boat?
you know, like you always have to call a boat a girl's name. Cookbooks are the same. They're called their her. They're female gendered, right?
Yeah, well, the best ones are. Yes, if you haven't joined us before, we rate each book out of something specific to the book itself or to the chef or to the whatever the recipes. And we rate out of 5 criteria, and they are usability and accessibility. That's one.
That's one.
Aesthetics. How pretty is it? What's the third one?
Is it veggie friendly?
Veggie friendly.
Ingredients
use. And lastly, inspirability. I told you I've forgotten
you
how to podcast.
This before, Hannah.
I've forgotten, lads. My brain's all over the place. And yeah, we changed the rating for each chef and for our book, because we're not rating the chef, we're rating the book. It's a her. And for this one, we're rating out of flat lays.
Because flat-lays.
Every Michael photo, flat-lays. Michael Flatley, Lord of the Dance. He loves boxy, I'm sure. That every photo is a masterclass in flat laying and natural light and food styling. So we thought we'd give that a little shout out. So, Vic, which, you know, if you can remember the criteria, how many are you giving this out of 5 flat lays?
Well, thanks to your clear explanation of the criteria. So, usability and accessibility, that's one. I'm giving it 1 Michael Flatley.
Yeah.
because I didn't find anything particularly hard. There's a lot of, like, simplicity in these recipes. They're also, I think you can tell that by it being like there's 3 or 4 sometimes 3 or 4 recipes to a page.
Yes,
love that. Ingredients used, I'm gonna give it 1, even though I couldn't find courgette flowers, but I feel like I wouldn't really know where to find them anyway. I didn't see anything else that I couldn't find.
You need a bougie little market,
and not
that's the only place
like
that
a little farmer's
them.
market,
which is ridiculous because they're so plentiful, right? Like courgettes are like a really easy thing to grow, but then they sell the courgettes. The courgettes themselves are so cheap in summer, and then courgette flowers are like, I don't know, £5 for 2 or something. It's ridiculous.
Who's to say I would have even bought them. I'm gonna come back to veggie friendly because I feel like we should have a discussion about it, because we haven't talked about it yet, and I feel like I want to go off what you say, because you are the veggie amongst us.
That's me.
Aesthetics, well, that's one, love it. Inspirability, like, obviously we've just raved about it for an hour. So that's at least 4 Michael Flatleys out of 4 out of 5. So shall we just have a quick discussion about veggie friendly, because there is a lot of meat and fish in here.
Did you feel like you struggled? I didn't struggle though. To be honest, it's the first time I've thought about it, because I felt like I didn't struggle, because there was so much else I wanted to make. And I kind of just, I mean, I've said before, I'm a bit of a shit veggie, but like, because it's such a joyful book to look at and to read, I'm kind of like, I don't mind reading about, you know, how you should have oysters with a champagne mignonette. And I was going to give it 1 for veggie friendliness, because I didn't feel like it was prohibitively meat focused. I thought it was had a bit of everything.
Great. So I will also give it 1. So that is 5 flat lays out of 5 for Table for 2 by Bree Graham for me. Woo! How about you?
Same. It has like Easter Bell Fridge Mezcla vibes to me in terms of coming back to it. It's a little bit different because it's not as like hers is such a mix of cultures and things, and this is a bit more kind of straightforward, kind of Mediterranean-y. Smoked chili and vodka rigatoni. I was tempted to make that too. I think it's beautiful cover. I think it's beautifully written. There was loads in here. I haven't turned down so many pages in a cookbook for ages. And I just loved it. Really, really liked it.
Well, also on ingredients, before we go, she does say that at one point she's like, eat seasonally, change these recipes around as you see fit. Like,
yeah.
I want you to mess around with them based on what you can get and what's in season, rather than, you know, using shitty mangoes for the mango cake in January.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And it feels like it's easy to do that, right? Like, I mean, everything is just, it's just kind of, you can picture that mango and vanilla cream cloud cake with, I don't know, something like pears or pineapple or something. I'm sure it would be equally as delicious. Plums. Do you want me to name more fruit? Peach?
So beginning with a pea, please. Yeah. Pears, pineapple, plums, peach.
Oh my God. As a lesson in how bloody repetitive we are in this podcast sometimes. My sisters were talking about making pesto in our group chat, and my sister said she'd use almonds instead of pine nuts, and I was like, yeah, I mean, you should use any nut because pine nuts are so expensive. And then they all were like, where have we heard this before? I need to get some new material.
We like to keep it fresh.
Yeah,
lads.
So they were like, it's the most expensive of the peanuts. Yeah, sorry. We'll try to freshen up the material.
We love you, Hannah sisters. Thanks for listening, frankly.
Yeah, exactly.
So carefully.
And thank you for listening.
Just thanks for existing.
Yeah, we'll pop you Vic's address in your DM so you can write her that love note that she so clearly desires.
I don't need a love note. I said a letter.
Oh, a letter.
I didn't say the word. I didn't say a love letter. I mean, if that's what you want to do, Brie, then that's what I would appreciate.
You have a complete artistic license to make the content of this letter.
Right. We love you, and we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Boop, boop. See you soon. Boop, boop. Bye.
See you later. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Cookbook Circle. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast and leave us a review as it helps others to find us and enjoy us. You can see how the recipes from this episode turned out on our Instagram at Cookbook Circle, where you can also get in touch with us, let us know your thoughts, feedback, ideas for episodes, whatever you like. We really love to hear from all of you. So we'll see you next time. Bye. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.